Woman's Hour's water bottle music for reading your letters. Well, we're not having your letters today, but a listener in Tring has asked how this music was produced. It was composed and produced, specially for Woman's Hour, in the BBC's radiophonic workshop by John Baker, and we've asked him to tell us about it.
The basic sound used for this music was made from a recording of water being slowly poured from a cider bottle. By taking just one of these sounds, all the notes that were wanted were made by playing the tape back at various speeds. The faster the tape goes, the higher the pitch. All the notes were measured and cut together in the right order, so that the tune sounded like this. The same technique was used for the bass. To get a rhythm track, I used the sound of a cork being pulled from a bottle. The tape was again played at different speeds, and the sound cut into a rhythm. By mixing these three tapes together, and adding some electronic echo, we end up with 8 seconds of music to introduce reading your letters.
Hello and welcome to Radio Clash. This is number 173 and it's the Radiophonic at 50 edition.
This is Radio Freedom.
Hello and welcome to Radio Clash. This is 173 and it's the long-awaited Radiophonic Workshop show. It's 50 years of the Radiophonic Workshop this year, as of April. But strangely, it's taken them 7 months to actually release any CDs relating to it, because there's already had some like the John Baker tapes that have been issued. But there's suddenly been, at the start of November, about three albums worth. The Pink Album, which is the first ever Radiophonic Workshop release. The White Album, which was what I call the White Album. I don't know what its proper name. They're all called Radiophonic Workshop, so it all gets very confusing, which is in the mid-70s, and a retrospective CD. So what is the Radiophonic Workshop? Well, it was set up to create sound effects and music for radio plays, what was called radiophonic plays, and then eventually TV for the BBC. So it was like an internal music department, originally just an internal sound effects department, because it was part of drama and wasn't supposed to create music, because that infringes on other people's areas, I'm sure there's probably union rules and all kinds of things going on there. So actually they all did music very much on the sly. So they were set up by Desmond Briscoe and Daphne Oram, I think that's how you pronounce her name. She left about 10 months later, but Desmond Briscoe went on to run the department for until I think it was somewhere in the mid to late 70s, if not early 80s, for many years anyway. And as I say, it produced a lot of output from things like BBC Schools music to iDents to backing stuff for Doctor Who, sci-fi, Blake 7, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and stuff like that. And anybody who had to watch or was bored like me, bunking off school, watching BBC Schools programming, because that's all that was on, would know their music, because always the idents, little clocks going round, would use this kind of music in the background, because that's all that, you know, that was sort of free music. And so there's a sort of a legacy there. But the interesting thing is, it became very well known for producing high quality of electronic music, which is ironic, since initially they actually didn't have any electronics, it was all done with tape. But they were actually modelled on some sort of European groups that were doing sort of electroacoustic tape works. So I'm going to start with a track which was the first ever recorded work of the Radiophonic Workshop. This is a track produced by the pre-Beatles George Martin. This is Waltz in Orbit by Ray Cathode, who actually was based around a time signal done for the BBC, and was actually the Maddalena Fagandini, who is someone who really, unlike Delia Derbyshire or some of the people in the Radiophonic Workshop, hasn't really got the respect she deserves. Thank you. So that was John Baker with Time and Tune, who was one of the sort of stars of the Radiophonic Workshop. And then before that was Maddalena Facandini with the Chemistry, the Chem Lab Mystery. And as I say, she did the tune that became Time Beat, or What's in Time, which was produced by George Martin and released in 1962, because apparently he used to work for the BBC Novelty Records Division, hence that's why that happened. And then before that was Delia Derbyshire with Door to Door. Then David Kane, who was another member of the BBC Radiophonic Workshop in the early days, with his Ident for Radio Sheffield using cutlery. So you get the idea, like the idea that sort of, it's an early version of sampling, it really is. They're taking bits of tape and then repitching it to certain things, as John Baker said at the start of the show. And it's a bit loud. And before that was John Baker with Festival Time. These are very fast, which makes it very difficult to actually DJ them. And then before that, of course, the track which made the Radiophonic Workshop famous, which is the one for Doctor Who by Delia Derbyshire. Now, the interesting thing about that was when she it was written by Ron Grainer. And it's quite funny that she presented it back to him and said, "Is that all my own music?" And she said, "Most of it." And apparently he tried to give her a co-writing credit, and the BBC wouldn't allow them. In fact, the BBC initially wouldn't allow them to even be credited for their work, and has taken all of their rights and all of their, they didn't see a penny apart from a wage for any of this work. Which is, you know, considering sort of something like Doctor Who theme, which has been franchised around the world, is a bit kind of rich, really. Especially as she definitely co-wrote it in the way she produced it, and obviously it was pre all that time where people understood how much a producer can add to something, and how much musically you can add with sound design. It was just thought as just strange boffins messing around with tapes and synthesizers. And then before that was Brian Hodgson, who has worked with Delia Derbyshire as well. I will play one of their tracks later on where they were doing it on the sly. And that's his incredibly famous Noise for the TARDIS. He didn't seem to do music, he seemed to do more the things like the BBC, the Doctor Who sound effects and more kind of sound design stuff. And then before that was the aforementioned Ray Cathode with Waltz in Orbit, which is the only time it seems to be that the Radiophonic Workshop have done a novelty single. Although you could argue that their Radiophonic Rock is a kind of like a novelty single. Even some of their effects records are a bit novelty. As sampled by Prince, I find out. There's one called Out of This World, and it was sampled for a track called Sample for I Know. See? Get that, Prince, all of your, I'm going to protect my work on MPG Productions, pull down stuff, and he samples stuff himself. Naughty. And I'm going to talk a little bit about one of the people who is going to be very featured. I forgot to mention at the start that I'm actually doing a Delia show, so although I've included some of Delia's work in here, if you're going to say, you haven't included X, Y, and Z, then it's probably going to be included in the Digital Debris Delia show, which will be a very different affair to this one. I mean, this is kind of more traditional, just me talking and playing music. That will not be that. That's going to be overlaying with various interviews and stuff that I've got about, sort of from her and about her and radio plays and shows. And the same with Daphne Oram, because people like us did a really good remix thing with Daphne Oram. So it's going to be sort of a much more mixed up affair. And less traditional. But John Baker was born in 1937. He went to the Royal Academy of Music and was very much a sort of a jazz person, as you can hear in his thing. So he actually made the tape work swing, which is difficult with a computer making it swing, let alone making it with tape swing, because he cut his notes shortly, longer or shorter to make them give them that swing, because it don't mean a thing until it ain't got that swing. He worked there until he was, in quote, retired in 1974. Now, unfortunately, I can't find my copy of the John Baker tapes, which I have around here somewhere. But from my from memory, and it's not on Wikipedia, what I find most interesting about John Baker is he was gay, and he was gay during a period where it wasn't exactly on, and his brother is as well, apparently, Nicholas Baker. And he actually worked with, I think it's Nicholas Baker, yes. Might be Anthony, is it Anthony Nicholas Baker or Anthony Baker? I can't remember. Or Nicholas Anthony Baker, I can't remember his exact name. And without finding the bloody CD, I can't tell you. But anyway, it seems to have been a kind of, he seemed to have joined the BBC partly for that kind of network. Obviously, quite a few gay men worked at the BBC, being drama and for, you know, sort of very queeny. But certainly his alcoholism was not so great side of that, and that's eventually why he's retired from the BBC, because he was drinking a lot and working at nights, which was actually allowed. I remember Delia did a lot of that, working at nights, and but he was doing it because he just wanted to you know, not show his drinking, because he could drink at night. He was retired in 1974, which is interesting because 1972 is when Delia left, because she got upset with the whole things about synthesizers and pissed off with the sort of the BBC hierarchy. So she stayed for about 9-10 years, and David Kane left in 73. So it's kind of, there was a real sort of shift towards synthesizers, and also the old guard leaving mostly in the early 70s, which you'll probably hear some later in the show. So it's kind of interesting to actually confirm something I've always thought, is the fact that when I've seen him in interviews, and with sort of the little sort of black polo neck and the way he sort of just was, I just thought, yes, my gaydar's going off, and this he was. But it's interesting that you won't see any mention of that on Wikipedia. I don't know if that, I don't think they do. Nope, no mention of that on Wikipedia. It just mentions his private life. Dear. Oh, Richard Anthony Baker, that's his brother. I'm just getting it totally wrong. So that's a little profile of John Baker. I'm going to play probably the most famous known track of his, which everyone knows from John Craven's Newsround, because it was actually done for something totally different, and then they used the end of it for the children's news show Newsround. So this is A New World by John Baker.
The tune is quite conventional, some of the sound qualities are rather unusual. For instance, the top line, the goose fair bit. This was made by blowing across the top of a small bottle. By recording this sound, and then playing the tape back at various speeds, you can get all the notes you want for that line in the piece. The faster the tape goes, the higher the note, and vice versa. All the notes have to be measured and cut, then stuck together in the right order. The result sounds a bit machine-made, but as we are trying to suggest a fairground organ, this is okay. The bass line is a guitar, but to get a more punchy attack at the beginning of each note, I use the sound of a wooden ruler being plucked. That sound is a bit too aggressive, so we took some of the top frequencies out of it. In other words, muffled it a bit. Added to the bass guitar, it sounds like this. The basic sound in the middle section of the piece was made from the sound of water being slowly poured from a cider bottle. By taking just one of these sounds and treating it in the same way as the blown bottle, we get this. This sounds a bit dry, so add some electronic echo. For the bow and arrow effect used in the call signs, we use three different sounds. The actual release of the arrow is the sound of a thick elastic band being plucked. Its flight through the air is an electronically produced noise, similar to the sound you get on a short wave of a radio receiver. The arrow's arrival is somebody thumping on a table. Well, those are some of the techniques that went into making the music and the call signs for Radio Nottingham. I hope you like them.
John Baker with The Chase, which is from the mid-60s, I think. And then before that was it was Dial In for Murder by John Baker, which and that was the radio interview from Radio Nottingham. I'm talking about the identity for Radio Nottingham. And then before that was New Worlds by John Baker. And I have to say, these are from a great compilation. Hopefully you won't mind me using these. From Trunk Records, which is the John Baker tapes 1 and 2. Because apparently, although obviously he's on the Pink Album and also the what I call the White Album as well. And I don't know if actually he's very much on the... he's sort of a little bit on the retrospective, although not majorly. There's some quite interesting omissions there. If you're into John Baker and his sort of style of working, I do recommend the John Baker tapes, definitely. But yes, so we're now going to talk about a little bit about Mrs. Derbyshire. Dilly Rand Derbyshire was born in 1937. She went to Cambridge College. She went to Girton College, completed a degree in mathematics and music. And she did her most famous piece, which is Doctor Who in 1963, of course. And she left the Radiophonic Workshop in 1972, and she went and worked with White Noise. Well, I should be playing some of their stuff. I've played them in the past, so check out a previous show. I'm pretty sure I've played White Noise on this show before, with David Warhouse and Ryan Hodgson. So you see, they did some sneaky work on the side, as Unit Delta Plus, and also as White Noise, and they also did some library music CDs, which you're going to hear one piece from. That's strictly not a BBC Radiophonic Workshops, but it's kind of like to show what other they were doing other things at the same time. And it's not, they weren't alone in that, because I think John Baker was doing adverts as well. So they were supplementing their income, their very low income, by doing other things as well. So I'm going to play a track called Mattachine, which is from the Pink Album. And later on you'll hear a track from the... From Tomorrow People in a short while. Just be patient.
Advertise, but never let temptation stop you reading. Salesman's grin. Let him give you demonstrations, but never let him take you in. Look around, but please remember, you'll want everything you see. Buy the best of what you came for, but never buy more than you
that little freak out at the end. That was John Baker with Seen Never Never, and that was written and performed with his brother, who we now know is Richard Anthony Baker, not Nicholas Baker, because that's wrong. Because I think he's actually, I think Nicholas Baker is actually a gay author, but anyway. I might be wrong. Actually, not so gay, also, I think. But anyway, so yes, and then before that was Dilly Derbyshire with the very, very ahead of her time sounding Environmental Studies. That's when the tracks have been coming round on various sort of on my iPod, and I thought that was a much later track. I thought it was a 1980s track, and no. That's from the 60s, late 60s, I think. Then before that was John Baker with Factors. Then before that was Dilly Derbyshire with Mattachine. So yes, I hope you're getting the idea of what the Radiophonic Workshop was doing, including vocoder work. And you'll hear some more of that later. This is Peter Howell, the Mainstream. But that's later. You're skipping to the end there. No, we're not skipping to the end, because that's with Pete Juxtaposo and anyway, so I mentioned that several of them kind of like moonlighted on the side, doing either adverts or library albums, because there really wasn't that much kind of scope. It wasn't like there is today. You can get signed to Warp and you can wear sort of teddy bear heads and do strange videos and stuff like that, like Aphex Twin, who loves Radiophonic Workshop, by the way. He actually issued a compilation on very rare compilation on his Reflex album, label, and that was in sort of the early 2000s. And that, along with the original re-release, the very short limited edition re-release of the Pink Album, was very expensive to buy. We're talking about £500 more or more. Secondhand. So I'm going to play a track. This is by Dilly Derbyshire and Brian Hodgson under the pseudonyms of Roos St. George. That's Nikki St. George and I think De La Roos, because she had red hair. So this is from Tomorrow's People. You might recognise it. It's called Lure of the Space Goddess. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Dick Mills with Dandelion Countdown. And I deny, you know, any of you not to go during that music. Look around you. Look around you. Look around you. Right, trying to explain to people who are not in the UK or didn't see that programme, Peter Serafinowicz, who appeared in Shaun of the Dead and various other comedy things. He was the one playing their housemate who turned into a zombie, that one. I actually did this spoof of the programmes that used to use the Radiophonic Workshop music, those children's programmes, sort of school to television programmes, called Look Around You, and it went to two series. It looks like there isn't going to be a third series, which is a real shame. But it actually had, the music was just like that Dick Mills Dandelion Countdown. That's what it was like, you know, the sort of arpeggiated stuff. And that's actually jumping a little bit into the future. That's 1986. Whereas other music is kind of like still in the kind of mid-early 70s. Because the track before that was Glynis Jones, Schlumruli, which was from the White Album, in the mid-70s. Then we have 20th Century Focus by John Baker, which I forget where that's from, but that would be probably, maybe, I think, mid-60s. Then before that was Glynis Johns, Veil and Mirrors. Again, they were specially done for this, that sort of white, the sort of the Radiophonic Workshop 1965 album, which I call the White Album. The reason why I call it the White Album is because actually it's very experimental, and it's also, they're experimenting, they're not actually commissioned pieces, they're actually just created them specially for the album. And then before that was John Baker Structures, which was done for a programme about architecture. I think it was, I forget which architecture it was relating to, but modern architecture. I'm probably scaring you. More Peter Howells. Let's go. However you pronounce that, it's all got very, very spookily Celtic in a kind of slightly Enya kind of way. So you can see that we're now sort of moving into the mid 70s with a shift, because they've lost three of their major sort of early people that took them to the 60s. But they gained the likes of Paddy Kingsland, Peter Howell, and Malcolm Clark. I don't know if he was around earlier, but certainly they and Peter Hodgson stayed around until the mid 70s, left, and then came back to run the department. So in the 80s, so he sort of continued. And Dick Mills, I'm not too sure. I think Dick Mills was an engineer early on, so I think he sort of stayed pretty much through all of this. So I'm going to play some tracks from an album which wasn't really re-released, and I have to say a thank you to Soundhog and your Soulseek account for this. it's an album called Fourth Dimension, which was actually the second Radiophonic Workshop album released. And actually, you've heard little bits of it in the background while I'm talking, because it's great backing music, it's great bed music. But this is it was actually a solo album of Paddy Kingsland's, and you can hear all the synths are coming in with live drums, and it's funky. And this is Seen and Heard by Paddy Kingsland. Thank you. That was Paddy Kingsland with the Changes Suite, which is from the... I have a bone to pick with... I assume it's Mark Ayers who wrote the stuff. He's the kind of the archivist for Soul Radiophonic stuff. And if you ever want to see a really good documentary on the Radiophonic Workshop, get Alchemists in Sound, which is was done by Victor Lewis Smith's Associated Radio Fusion Company, and it's very good. It was shown on BBC4. If they re-show it, watch it. They actually said the wrong person. That was The Changes was written by Peter Dickinson. They said something like John Christopher, never heard of him. And then before that was, where is it? Scroll. Oh, I hate even trying to find these things. And then before that was Colour Radio, again by Paddy Kingsland. And that was from the Fourth Dimension album. And then before that was Seen and Heard, which I think was one of the few... I think Colour Radio was written for it, and Seen and Heard was done for a programme. So, I mean, a little bit of facts about Paddy Kingsland. Let me get the music right. Paddy Kingsland joined the Radiophonic Workshop in 1970. He left in 1981. He did music for Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, or you might hear at some point, The Changes and Doctor Who, and also Around the World in 80 Days and Pole to Pole, which I assume he did later on. Yes, because they're post 1981. Though interestingly, he must have been working, or maybe he was freelancing, because they employed freelancers later on, and brought people in ad hoc in the 80s. So who knows? But doesn't say anything more about him on Wikipedia, and I don't know anything more about him either. Dick Mealsdale's right, yes, joined the Radiophonic Workshop in 1958, so he's one of the originals who stayed and then went into doing producing sort of sound effects and eventually actual sort of music for the Radiophonic Workshop, and most famously Doctor Who, and Peter Howell, who was born in 1948, and he was previous career in music, and joined them in 1974, obviously to replace the outgoing John Baker. Obviously, wanted someone musical. And talking of John Baker, I'm going to do a little sort of maritime section. This is Barnacle Bill.
It's bath time, bath time. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Peter Howell with the Greenwich Chorus. And that apparently jammed the switchboards when it went out on a programme called The Body in Question in 1978. And because everyone was going, what the hell is that sound? Of course, we all now know it as the sound of the vocoder, which is a device for sort of synthesising the voice to a certain pitch, if I remember correctly. Yes, I'm not going to tell you the physics behind it or electronics either. But yeah, basically, it sort of re-pitches the voice electronically to a new pitch. So he apparently was just singing total gibberish. But obviously, what I like about that is that really epitomizes the whole kind of the whole feel of the Benjamin Workshop is take something sort of old and mix it with something new, take something like found samples and found sounds like the Greenwich Observatory clock, and then use that for a rhythm and then do a tune over it. That's a very radiophonic thing to do. And that's what they seem to specialise in. And it's beautiful. It's beautiful. But yes, so that was Peter Howell. Then before that was Malcolm Clark with Milonga, which was a sort of a Latin Argentinian based track. I didn't mention Malcolm Clark. He was born in 1943, and he was a member for the workshop from 69 to 94. And I'm not too sure about. I've not ever heard. He's one of these people, a bit like some of the people I mentioned before, who hasn't really had the attention turned on him, which is bizarre, since there's a lot of other people who have into the workshop. And of course, very specifically, his wiki page is very tiny. But he did music for the Sea Devils and Earthshock on Doctor Who, and apparently thought, I don't know if this is true, because you never trust something on Wikipedia. Most of these things I'm just using it as sort of backup to stuff I already know, because I can't store any of this shit in my head, I can tell you. Apparently he thought that the music, radiophonic music, should be fine art, and the rest of them thought otherwise, which I thought was quite good. So that was Milonga by Malcolm Clark. Then before that was Paddy Kingsland, The Whale, of course, from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Woohoo! And if anyone has the soundtrack, as in the music from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, I don't know if it's ever released. If it was ever released, I want it. I will love you forever if you can get me the whole music. I'm not talking about the Burt Leiden single, which is actually, I don't think, was the Radiophonic Workshop, so I'm not playing it, because that wasn't actually done. That was done by Tim Suster. I don't think he was actually part of the workshop, and so I think he was just sort of an external sort of composer, because they couldn't license the Eagles version, that's why. But yes, that was one of the tracks done for the I think that was done for the TV series. That might be done for the radio series as well, because he worked on both. Then before that was Peter Howell and Dick Mills with Fancy Fish Aquarium. Of course, that's Carnival of the Animals, who by Saint-Saëns. The interesting thing about that is Dick Mills is an avid fishkeeper. Fishkeeper sounds dodgy, doesn't it? He's written books on aquariums and things like that. And then before that was Dick Mills with Seascape. Yes. So there was a marine theme here. And then before that, again, Paddy Kingsland for Brighton Pier. That's from 1981 with Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Or might be 78, depending if it's a radio show or a TV show, which I don't know. I could look over there in the little bit thing, but that will mean that I can't talk to you. Then before that was Malcolm Clark again with Bath Time, especially done for the White album. Then before that was going way, way back, was Barnacle Bill by John Baker from the John Baker tapes. Oh dear. So we're now in the 80s. Well, no, not literally, but we are in the 80s. Sort of all that stuff was sort of like early 80s to late 70s, and now we're most definitely in the 80s with the music. We're sort of getting into the situation where they're mostly using freelancers, and really sort of time is ticking for them, and they bring back Desmond Briscoe retires. I can't remember exactly when he does retire. I will check that. They bring Brian Hodgson back to manage the department, and eventually he leaves because He wants to try and keep the department going when it, in the sort of, I think, probably in the sort of John Burt era, 90s, I think. But it still doesn't work. It just sort of stumbles on until it finally ends in, I think, 1997 is the last thing they do. But really, the idea of kind of like a core staff, apart from Elizabeth Parker, who you'll hear some music from, and a few others, seems to have gone. But before that, we've got the wonders of Tomorrow's World. That was Elizabeth Parker with Planet Earth. That's a little excerpt. It's quite a long, thing, and that's from the big BBC series Planet Earth. And Elizabeth Parker did some sort of quite interesting work later on, and she's still going. As is Paddy Kingsland, as is Peter Howell, and but sadly, I have to say. John Baker died in 1997. We had Sidilia Derbyshire died in, I think, 2003. I think that's when she died. Dick Mills is still going strong. Malcolm Clark died in 2003. Desmond Briscoe died in 2006. And Brian Hodgson is still happily going, which is good. But yes, it's sort of... So you probably might have guessed by that sort of slightly morbid list, we're at the end of the show. It's this is the last sort of bit. I haven't included so much of the late music, but that's partly because the retrospective kind of jumps sort of from 1980s sort of quite quickly. And there's a kind of a reason for that. The music isn't really as good as it was in the early days, I think. Although, you know, it's sort of getting to the usual kind of fare, the usual kind of orchestral type fare that you get. Oops, sorry. But certainly I have some really nice tunes by Elizabeth Parker, and I'll play another track by her in a bit. And then before that was Jonathan Gibbs, Computers in the Real World. That's from 1983 or mid-80s. Then Tomorrow's World, which I think is a radiophonic tune, although actually it was written by Martin Cook and Richard Denton, so I can't actually find any confirmation of whether it's radiophonic or not. So I've always thought it was a radiophonic tune, but I might be wrong. It'd be ironic if it isn't a radiophonic tune. So you can find out more by going to Radio Clash at mutantpop.net/radioclash, and you can email me at radioclash@mutantpop.net and say, God, this show is all over the place. And I'd agree with you. I truly would agree with you. But that's the problem, is having to mix these tunes. These very, very short tunes together is actually quite fun. I hope that's given a taste of to the whole of the Radiophonic Workshop, and I hope you're from the last 50 years of Radiophonic Workshop. Obviously, not really 50 years because it stopped in 1997, but certainly 41 years of... is it 41? No, 39 years of Radiophonic Workshop. And yes, happy birthday, Radiophonic Workshop. I can't say long may you continue, because you're not, but maybe a bit like Top of the Pops, I'll bring it back one day, or even I see Tomorrow's World as being considered to come back. I mean, like Doctor Who coming back, maybe all these things just going to come back one day. So, yes, it's a fond farewell to Room 13 at the BBC, and I will see you soon. I'm going to play out with two tracks. One is going back to a John Baker track. This is from Doctor Who, and this is not on any of the CDs. Well, it is on a CD, but it's not on... it's on one of the Doctor Who CDs, I think. And this is from The Invasion. Not my era of Doctor Who at all, but and this is music too from Time in Advance, and then I'm going to play the last track that was worked on, or actually the second to last track strictly, but the last major track that was worked on at the Radiophonic Workshop, and there's Elizabeth Parker with Lost Gardens of Heligan, and there's something very, very sad about that. I don't know if it's just because it's the last track or something, but it's already... There's something very appropriate about the last track of the Radiophonic Workshop about a garden that's been lost in Cornwall for many years, and the artistry lost, and suddenly it was refound. That kind of like probably signifies the whole of Radiophonic Workshop, really, doesn't it? So I hope you're all well, and I'll speak to you soon. Thank you.
Spin-off. Spin-off.
Spin-off. Spin-off.